This is a recording of Dr. Tom Rozell for Sunday, June 10th, 2018. You can listen to this program live every Sunday afternoon from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WML.
The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed on this program are not the views of 105.9 FM and AM 630 WML.
The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozell Live by Dr. Tom Rozell, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Rozell Live, right now. On 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozell Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozell Live in studio, waiting to take your calls on any little thing you'd like to talk about, as long as it's your health. 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Give me a call. Let's go through the weeds a little bit on your health problems, and let's talk about what can be done without drugs and without surgery today. Perhaps you've had a problem that you've been struggling with. You've tried. You've applied all kinds of things and come up with the same thing. You know, nothing that really works. Well, here's an opportunity. We're going to talk a little bit about a fascinating part of your nervous system today and things that we put all kinds of tags and, you know, blame it for so many things, but really don't even know what we're blaming or why. And we'll get into that in just a second. And why am I so interested in one particular nerve? Well, we pay attention to it on a regular basis, but I just came back from an international conference in Edinburgh, Scotland. And these are some of the most amazing doctors from all over the planet, physicians, MDs, chiropractors, osteopaths, doctors of Oriental medicine. And they practice especially that many of you know that we utilize in our practice called applied kinesiology. But we're going to get into some of the amazing focus of the presentations that were given by some amazing doctors. And I want to share that with you. I want to give you the opportunity to take the lid off, if you will, on so many of these things. But nevertheless, call me at 888-630-9625. There's this little nerve. Actually, it's a big nerve. It's the longest nerve in your body, and it starts in the brain. It's bilateral, has two sides to it. It's the 10th nerve in your brain. It's called the 10th cranial nerve. And that nerve is called the vagus nerve. And that vagus nerve is this thing that wanders from the brain all the way down to your body, and some authors say it goes all the way down and touches the top of your urinary bladder. So what happens in the vagus nerve? It turns out doesn't necessarily stay in the vagus nerve. There's far-reaching ramifications. The longest nerve, this 10th cranial nerve, is named the way it is because it wanders. It wanders just like kind of a crazy little vagabond, you know, sending out fibers from your brain into your organ systems. And this vagus nerve is literally the guy that directs all of your inner nervous system, if you will, the inside body nerve responses. It's called the parasympathetic nervous system. And that parasympathetic, what it means is that it controls the organs to repair themselves, the tissues to repair themselves. And if this thing isn't working the way that it's supposed to, no matter what you do and how you run your life or not run your life, nothing is going to happen and you go into dysfunctional states that are really unbelievable. So like a good captain, it does a great job of overseeing a vast range of all kinds of functions and impulses and communications and directives throughout the entire body. The research currently out there reveals that it may be the missing link to treating chronic inflammatory conditions within the body. And it's, you know, suddenly in the medical arena opening up to a very exciting area, a new field of treatment that leaves, and thankfully, medications behind in the back pocket. So I'm going to give you some real facts about this, and we're going to talk about it a little bit more. But you have to understand that the vagus nerve prevents, when it's working properly, it prevents inflammatory responses from getting out of control. It's involved in storing memories within the body, but I mean reactive memories, things that, you know, you do certain things and they repeat over and over again. It helps you breathe. It's involved in your heart function. It allows you to relax. It allows your you know, you've heard the term brain-gut phenomena. Well, that's very crucial in the captainship, if you will, of this vagus nerve, this brain nerve, this cranial nerve. And it can be irritated in so many different ways. So we're going to go on and we're going to talk about this nerve, this single nerve that connects all of your vital organs, every one of them. And it just might be the future that we're looking for in controlling chronic disease processes, the initiation of things like Alzheimer's, believe it or not, and Parkinson's. And the papers were amazing in the presentations that we left. Things that we know about, things that we see in the office. But, you know, God forbid we say that we know these things to happen because we see our patients respond properly. But that's anecdotal, if you will. Now research is starting to push that out. So the vagus nerve starts in the brainstem. It's the lower portion of the brain, and it's right behind your ears. So if you put your fingers, you know, right behind your ears and you feel the bony apparatus there, just in front of that is where the vagus nerve comes down, and it travels down the side of your neck on both sides. It goes across the chest and down through the body all the way into the abdomen and the lower portion of the abdomen. So the vagus, as I said earlier, means wanderer. It's a wandering nerve, and it's a bundle of nerves that roves through the body. You know, it networks with the brain and the stomach, digestive system, the lungs, the heart, the spleen, the liver, the kidneys, and so forth and so on. It touches virtually everything, not to mention that there's a range of other nerves that are involved in its communication, nerves that allow you to have speech, eye contact, facial expression, even the ability to tune into other people's voices, to identify and differentiate voice. This all starts at that brainstem area and operates within the vagus. So when you think about the far-reaching effect of this crazy long wanderer, this vagus nerve, it begins to say, hey, shouldn't we begin to look at the nervous system first? When you look at body balance and body mechanisms communicating the way they're supposed to, it presupposes that everything is being allowed to manifest or express itself in a way that can optimize its capacity to allow other systems to work cooperatively in tandem to each other. So, but if you have some disturbance of this transmission, particularly in this long crazy wanderer, this long coaxial cable, and look at it that way, by the way. Look at it as a big coaxial cable. You know, a coaxial cable is this long, huge fiber that has all these little fibrils, if you will, within it, and it goes different places. But if somehow one of the fibrils is irritated, it doesn't mean that the whole system shuts down. It just means that there's going to be symptoms that are associated with where that fibril goes. So this vagus nerve is made up of thousands and thousands of fibers, and 80% of them are sensory, meaning that this wanderer, this vagus nerve, reports everything back to your brain and, you know, of what's going on inside in the organ systems and so forth. So if you set aside the vagus, there's no fail-safe. There's no regulatory mechanism that takes place without it. Matter of fact, some of the papers, one that was presented by a physician in Germany, was talking about how the vagus nerve is so crucial and critical in the diagnostic, if you will, prognostic when it comes to the heart itself. That if the vagus nerve is not working the way it's supposed to, the heart can no longer work properly. That's in many cases, we see cases of afibrillation in the inability of the heart to push the way it should be. And you see, as a result of that, you can see drops in blood pressure. You can see heart fibrillation and so forth, very much like a syndrome that we call POTS, P-O-T-S. POTS is this enigma, if you will, within the healthcare arena that when it shows up, people are just, they're weak, they're dizzy, they pass out, they have syncopic episodes. So this may be the triggering mechanisms. Again, anecdotally, we begin to realize that there's a lot of data that we've seen over 41 years of practice that says, yep, this is the key. So operating at a level, if you will, this wanderer, far below our conscious mind, this vagus nerve is the key component, the vital piece of controlling our body's health. It's essential in regulating that parasympathetic system, that calming system, that repair system within the body. And the vagus nerves, remember I said vagus nerves because there's two of them, one on each side of the body, from the brainstem, you know, are the same. They do the same type of thing. It's in parallel. So people have stronger vasic activity, means their body can relax faster after a stress episode. So when you go into stress, it's dependent on your vagus system to communicate from the brain to the body, from the body to the brain, to allow your system to calm down. Now, what we see is that when there is destruction and disruption within the structural system of the body, the vagus nerve is primarily affected because of two things. One, direct pressure, if you will, from its origin at the brain level, at the base of the brain, the skull, the upper part of the neck, the vertebrae, and also this feedback loop now that's out of control. This whole electric circle begins to misfire, miscommunicated, if you will. It goes into this fight-flight response where adrenaline, you know, has been released in the body in its response to danger. And, you know, in today's world, danger is not necessarily running away from the tiger. It's running away from emotional stress. It's running away from the way our brains work. It's running away from the things that we put in our body. All of these things are stressful to the system, and the vagus is responsible for regulating the piece. So, The strength of your vagus nerve, or its response, if you will, is known as, you'll find in the literature, it's called vagal tone, and it can be measured. You can see it on an electrocardiogram if you're looking at the right pieces. Every time you breathe in, your heart beats a little faster to speed the flow of oxygenated blood through your body. So when you breathe out, your heart slows down. So when you go into a meditative breathe in, breathe out, you breathe in, and when you breathe out slowly, your heart, your body is relaxing. And this variability, if you will, this breathing out, the breathing up, speeding up and slowing down, is one of the many things that is regulated by this vagus nerve, or the vagal tone, if you will. And it's important to be able to measure that. So as part of the immunological system, inflammation has a useful tool in helping the body to heal from an injury. As long as it's short-lived, as long as it's not something that continues to perpetuate. You've heard me say repetitively, program after program, that inflammation is the killer. Well, it's true, but as long as it's doing its job appropriately and doesn't continue beyond that level, then inflammation's our friend. The problem is that sometimes it doesn't switch off. And the switching off has to do with certain proteins that fuel inflammatory reactions. So when we talk about something like low vagal tone, what that means is this regulation is being less effective and inflammation now is becoming far more extensive. And we end up with this vicious cycle that eats on itself. And we're going to get into the program a little bit today. We're going to talk more about it because you're going to recognize certain things within yourself that are important that you identify them. And what I want you to know from the beginning, this is fixable. This is fixable. It's not fixable with a drug. It's not fixable by, you know, external means. There are things that have to be done very specifically. We'll talk a little bit about that as we go through the program today. But we're talking about this amazing wanderer, this vagus nerve that comes off the brain and touches everything through the body, from the heart to the lungs to the stomach, the intestinal tract, the kidneys, the liver, and so forth and so on. And without it working properly, we have a problem. We're going to talk about the vagus stimulation when it has to do with rheumatoid arthritis. We're going to talk about the vagus nerve and how the gut cannot work properly unless it's working properly. And you're going to get an idea that every time that we put these biologicals in our body to suppress neurological function or autoimmune function within the body, that we're actually perpetuating the continuation of the problem. This a tremendous article that came out May 21st in 2014 in the Journal of Neurosciences that we'll talk a little bit about, and I think you'll find it interesting. But in the meantime, call me, 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle live in studio, 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Call me. Let's talk about your stuff. We've got several things that we are getting into, but they all come from this little nerve, this wanderer nerve, this wandering minstrel, if you will, that starts at the brainstem and goes all the way through the body and attaches itself to every organ system virtually in your system. It's called the vagus nerve, and it's called the wanderer because it has a Latin root called the vagus, which means wanderer. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about it. It's important that you understand how intimate this is and how finally now traditional medicine is beginning to identify this as a major contributor, if not the regulator, that allows the body to heal in virtually every health diagnostic condition in the body. And that's something. And I'm making a huge statement there. Every health condition in the body. So we're talking about the vagus nerve, and it conveys communication to the gut, the intestinal tract. We talked about its relationship that they're starting to identify when it comes to Parkinson's and other neurological tremors. The vagus nerve conveys these messages to every system that you can name. And without its ability to function normally, nothing heals properly. So you end up with this misdiagnosis of diseases. You know that the best diagnosis in the world in the medical arena is 50% accuracy? 50% that they're going to hit it exactly right. And that comes out of where? Cleveland Clinic. And everybody else is underneath that. So when you're talking about traditional allopathic medicine, 50% of the time, they're right on the mark. That makes me a little uncomfortable. You know, I don't know about you, but, you know, I think it's time we start looking at function and how it relates to the body. And to understand function, we really have to understand this wanderer, this vagus nerve, this 10th cranial nerve that comes from the brainstem of the body and attaches itself in its orchestration, its command center, to virtually everything else that goes on. In an article, this goes back a couple, 3 years ago, about 2013, they started talking about identifying the medical mismanagement, if you will, of misdiagnosis. And it's simply because of the fact that medicine looks at symptom processes, the inflammatory reactions within the body, or the pain patterns, or the interrelated different types of system conditions, instead of understanding what the function is. So it's starting to realize that to understand and to treat, you have to understand function at its highest level. Let's go to the phones. Barbara, how can I help you? Thank you for your calling.
Yes, I have IPF, which is, I'm sure you know, but just as clarification, the way it's been explained to me, is in the lungs, there's alveoli that are supposed to be like plump grapes.
Yes.
And with this IPF, in other words, idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis,
right.
It turns these plump grapes into dried up raisins. And I was wondering if the vagus nerve and the chronic inflammation would be a factor in IPF.
It could very well be.
What I can do about it.
Barbara, can you hear me?
That has just been approved
Barbara.
By the FDA a couple of years ago, and I am taking that.
Okay. Barbara, unfortunately, I can hear you, but you can't hear me. So I heard enough of your questions that I can answer it. So in any kind of chronic lung problem, particularly with fibrosis, you have to understand what the triggering mechanism was that initiated it. And it very much can be, as you suggested, an inflammatory reaction that is not being controlled properly. So if there was an injury that had taken place at one point of your life and that affected your neck, a car accident, a fall, a blow, a trauma, any of those things can initiate a vagal response or a vagus response. And as I said earlier, there's proteins that are dependent, or the vagus nerve is dependent on certain proteins to allow that control, if you would, of inflammatory reactions. So is it possible? Yes. If you can identify why the vagus is not working properly, you can begin then to repair, or at least to make anything better. When you have a fibrocystic problem, you look at why is the tissue hardening? The little grape sacs that you talk to are called the bronchioles. And they are the bronchioli. They're little end parts of the lung, and they can get hard for a lot of reasons. And some of these things start at birth, or not at birth, but they identify them in the early childhood stages. And some of them come about as we get older because of exposures. And if you could hear me on our conversation, I would have asked you about exposures, but those are things that you need to look at. So I'm sorry, but the short answer is yes. I'll try to touch on it a little bit more when I come back after the break, but If it's a vagal problem, or if the proteins aren't adequate enough, if the inflammatory circuits can't be, if you blunted, yes, it's very definitely related to a vagal response, or at least in part not allow it to heal. We're coming up to a break, that halfway point to the program. We're talking about the wanderer, the vagus nerve. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Yes, indeed, the wanderer, the vagus nerve, the 10th cranial nerve. I know we're getting a little silly, but nevertheless, in fact, that's what it's called. It's Latin, and it means wander. And it's a nerve that starts at the base of the brain and goes all the way through and touches virtually everything in your upper part of your body, from the heart to the lungs, the kidneys, the stomach, the liver, all the way down to the urinary bladder. And it controls healing, and it controls inflammatory regulatory pathways in the body. And why am I talking this? Well, because I just came back from Edinburgh, Scotland, and I was privileged to sit with some amazing physicians from all over the world. They practice an area that I specialize in applied kinesiology, and some of the papers were not only magnificent, they were eye-opening. And we've known that this nerve, this brainstem nerve, has a major impact on the body for years, anecdotally. But those are anecdotes. And now we're starting to see absolute research being dedicated to this. And the traditional medical arena now is starting to be aware that you have to have an understanding of function before you can fix anything. Otherwise, you continue to perpetuate a problem, if not make it worse. There was a physician that Sue and I happened to listen to. It's been about 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago. We were at a conference on cardiovascular problems, cardiovascular disease. He was a medical physician who made a statement, which, you know, she and I looked at each other and said, finally, and said that anybody who has atrial fib with no other pathology present should never be treated medically with medication. And the reason he said that, he said, because by treating it medically, you will in fact cause all the problems that you're trying to prevent. So he touched on it that day. We talked a little bit about the vagus nerve for that conference as well. But here was the focus of things that we were listening to for the last several days. And this vagus nerve, this wanderer, if you will, has a tremendous impact into the healing process. I want to talk to you a little bit about how it begins to communicate between the brain and the intestinal system and inflammatory pathways. But I want to encourage you, 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. If you've ever been diagnosed with POTS, P-O-T-S, or if you've been diagnosed with any kind of immunological reaction or chronic pain pattern, this is a nerve that has its little fingers in it, its little tidbits. We said that the vagus nerve is very much like a coaxial cable with all these little fibrils going everywhere. Well, the vagus nerve also may help reduce RA, or rheumatoid arthritic symptoms. And the treatment method may be also very useful for other inflammatory diseases such as Crohn's and Parkinson's and the like. And to take it to another level, even things like colitis problems. Anytime that I treat a colitis patient or an irritable bowel patient, I always treat the irritation that may exist within the vagus nerve and its distribution, and it can try to find out where it's being irritated. And so often it's in the upper portion of the neck, the lower portion of the brainstem. Let's talk about rheumatoid arthritis, because all of us have seen the ads out there and the biologicals that they use, which are horrible in their side effects. And, you know, you're made to feel guilty sometimes if you don't take these medications because of the beautiful background that they advertise them with. But rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease characterized by the immune system attacking the joint spaces and beginning to break them down. Although the cause medically is unknown, the goal of the treatment is to stop the inflammatory reaction, which relieves the symptoms and supposedly prevents worsening of the damage and reduces the long-term complication. Well, it's like, you know, is the fix worse than the cure sometimes? And this is what you have to be careful with. But in conditions like rheumatoid or other advanced inflammatory reactions, there's a commonality, and the commonality is inflammation, and the commonality is from the medical arena is that they don't understand what the triggering pattern is. So there's been a lot of things that have been proposed, like there could be a low-lying bacterial infection within the intestinal tract, and so it means that the immune system is not taking care of it. So what do? They give you low dosage of antibiotics for a long time, which now totally wrecks the immune system even further, without asking the question, why is the body in its normal regulatory pattern, its own fail-safe, not being able to fix that? Well, the University of Amsterdam, the Feinstein Institute for Medical Research, and Setpoint Medicine tested whether stimulating the inflammatory reflex directly, meaning from the vagus nerve, using an implanted device could reduce the symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis. Now, this is kind of an interesting study. And while it had worked before in studies with animals, of course they used animals, the method's success in the recent study, it suggested that, you know, maybe if we did the same thing in humans that we can control the inflammatory reaction. Well, I think that's taken a little far stretched to get a result because there's other ways of doing that. And the end product was that, yes, it can be. The real breakthrough is the ability to help people suffering with inflammatory processes. And the guy by the name of Dr. Kevin Tracy, who's the president and CEO of the Feinstein Institute for Medical Research, he said, I'm going to quote this, he said, "While we've previously studied animal models of inflammation, until now we had no proof that electrical stimulation of the vagus nerve can indeed inhibit," and the thing that they are looking at is cytokines. Cytokine production is an inflammatory pathway element and reduces severity in humans. He said, "I believe the study will change the way that we see modern medicine." Really? No kidding. You know, it's taken them to do electrical mechanical stimulation to figure out that, hey, listen, there's this long nerve called the vagus nerve, and that maybe it has, you know, other functions. You know, years ago, by the way, many of you are old enough to remember that when they used to treat ulcers in the stomach, they do a vagectomy. They would cut the vagus nerve to the stomach because they figured that would stop producing the hydrochloric acid. Now they just give you the things that dumb down the acid production. But here's a nerve that has such far-reaching effect, and you don't have to go too far to figure out that there's an important piece that might be missing here, and that's how do we do it from a natural point of view and really make a difference. You know, the vagus nerve conveys messages, as I said, between the brain and the intestinal system, and this vagus nerve, this wanderer, it goes everywhere, right? So the vagus nerve is constantly sending updated messages to the brain. And it's, you know, it's got this biological feedback mechanism. And matter of fact, about up to, some authors will say 90% of its neurological fibers, the vagus nerve fibers, are dedicated to communicating the state of what your internal system is doing, your heart, your lungs, your stomach, your intestinal tract, and so forth. You know, it tells the brain, okay, we got a problem here, so we got to fix it. So then there's a feedback loop from the brain after that. So they use the term, you know, in clinical settings, afferent and efferent typically refers to nerves that lead into or out of the brain. So the afferent signals are sent from a nerve receptor site, receiver site into the brain, while the efferent signals are sent from the brain to the body, the rest of you, right? So we got incoming, we got outgoing. And that's really all you really need to know about that. So, you know, the feelings, the gut feelings, the instincts, you know, that are, you know, are literally emotional intuitions that are transferred to your brain from your vagus nerve. For you to have that gut feeling, that intuitive instinct, your vagus nerve has to work. And if it's not working properly, if it doesn't have the proteins to be able to communicate properly and the inflammatory levels are too high, you lose that ability to be instinctive or instinctual, if you say. You lose that gut level reaction. So, you know, as sometimes we get to a place where, you know, I used to be able to sense that properly and I can't do it anymore. That's because the vagus is not communicating properly. It's not working the way it's supposed to. And then what you see is you see modulations take place, meaning alterations of mood and distinctive types of things of fear and anxiety, all due to the fact that this vagus nerve isn't working the way it's supposed to, or it's responding to another process called fight flight, which we touched upon just a little bit. And it's important that in that fight flight pattern, that if it goes too far, it produces what it's trying to run away from. You know, it's the thing that pulls you away from the tiger, as we said earlier, but any other kind of stress. But if it goes on without any kind of stoppage, inhibition, then we end up in a dangerous situation that is self-perpetuating and is not one that we want to deal with. But, you know, this thing is so intriguing because it's finally giving credence, if you will, in traditional science to some of the things that we've been talking about for many years in our practice and dealing with our patients. There's more and more cases of Parkinson's and all types and other types of neurological damage within the brain and the nervous system. And there was another article, it came out about a year and a half ago, I think, but 2015, time goes very, very quickly. And it's from Neuroscience and Human Behavior magazine. And it simply said Parkinson's may begin in the gut and then spread to the brain by the vagus nerve, which is something that we've been aware of, that you have to, particularly with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and so forth, it's not necessarily just a brain-based problem. You have to look at the second brain of the intestinal tract. So there was a major epidemiological, if you will, reporting registry-based study from Aris University and Aris University Hospital, and it basically indicate that Parkinson's disease begins in the intestinal tract, in the gastrointestinal system. And it's the largest study of its kind. It's a huge study. And chronic neurodegenerative Parkinson's disease affects an increasing number of people, as we know it has. And the scientists still do not know why some people develop Parkinson's and others don't. And now researchers from Aris University have found that there may be a very intimate correlation between intestinal tract dysfunction and the progression of the disease. So instead of looking at things to fix the brain, we've got to look at things to fix the gut. And in Western society, we're seeing huge shifts in diet, and not for the good. We're seeing huge exposures to stress and the inability of the body to adapt, which will affect what? Our friend, the vagus nerve, the wanderer. And because of that communication, that monitoring system not working the way it's supposed to, so the body can't put things out to modulate, to dampen, to modify, if you will, now we have these chronic disease processes that are on the rise. The hypothesis that turned out to be correct was a study that shows that patients who've had the entire nerve severed, cut, were protected against Parkinson's disease. Isn't that interesting? If they didn't have a vagus nerve, they didn't get Parkinson's. So the risk was halved after 20 years. However, patients who had only a small part of the vagus nerve severed were not protected. If they still had part of the vagus nerve, they still could get Parkinson's. This is like mind-boggling. So what do? You could do a vagectomy. You cut the vagus nerve and let everybody go free flow on their own. I don't think so. That's not what you want to do. But it's interesting to show that this nerve is intimately related, at least anecdotally, you know, to the fact that the vagus nerve is involved here. You know, the research project, you know, was published in the internationally recognized Journal of Annals of Neurology. So this is not, you know, Tom Rozelle telling you that these things are happening. This is science. And unfortunately, a lot of the science is outside the United States. Why is that? Why is so much that is being intimately related to health and wellness and the resolution and identification of problems being done outside of the good old U.S. of A? You know, I'll let you figure that one out, okay? We won't kind of touch that one because every time I do, I get in trouble. 888-630-9625, 888-630-9625. You know, the vagus nerve has an impact on not only your health, your mood, your ability to perform, your be able to step up to the top. You know, let's change the conversation a little bit. And let's talk about, you know, some of the key points and important distinctions. You know, like acute and chronic stress, right? It affects you physically. It can change your hormone levels. It activates your body's inflammatory response. Remember everything that I talk about. I talk about structural, chemical, emotional stress, injury patterns, things that you put in your body that shouldn't be there, things that you need more of, you don't get enough of. Today's work, or world, excuse me, the all the incoming, the electromagnetic fields, things that, all the stuff we put in animals that we get indirectly. And then emotional stress, how our mind works, ultimately determines what takes place. You know, there's evidence that people under chronic stress are more susceptible to colds and flus, and the greater risk of developing depression and heart disease. If you're depressed, you have a greater tendency to heart disease. If you have, you know, things that predispose to heart disease, it's going to affect your emotional pathways. Why do we get sick? Why do we have colds and flus? What is, you know, why isn't our body protecting us? You know, we know part of it is our exposures to all kinds of things that we shouldn't be exposed to. You know, the sugar, sodas, coffee, you know, black teas, fast food, fried foods, alcohol, gluten, additives, preservatives, you know, GMO products. I know I just took away all your diets. I'm very sorry. I apologize. But nevertheless, you know, it's true that if it's not supportive and nutritively there, you know, when I hear physicians say that diet has nothing to do with health and sickness, I sit there and I bite my tongue so hard that I have to excuse myself and put ice on it because it bleeds. You know, it's just what stupidity comes over these people that they have to be, you know, an input from a different planet someplace. But chronic stress increases the stress hormone cortisol and affects many brain functions, and it puts you at risk for many mood disorders and mental issues. So if we know that, and we know that we have control, and we know that the vagus nerve is affected directly by all these stressors, and particularly structural stress and physiological biochemical reflexes within the system, then why aren't we looking to the cause, the underlying process? I'm going to leave you with that thought for a second, and we'll come back and we're going to tie this all together for you, because it's something that keeps me up at night, because I worry about you. I worry about the people that I put my hands on a day-to-day basis. And what can I do better? What can I get them to take control of in their lives and make it the way it's supposed to, a perfect world, because your body's working the way it's supposed to? Think about that for a second. We'll be right back after some very important messages. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rosell Live.
105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Tom Rosell. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rosell Live. We're in the studio on this kind of in-between day. It's going to be sticky outside and probably a few thunder boomers, but, you know, other than that, in-between, it should be a really, really, really nice day. You listen to us every Sunday, 12 noon, on the Eastern Seaboard, and those of you all over the place. You know, I was flattered this week when I was in Edinburgh, because I had several doctors come up to me, one from Russia, actually, and another one from Belgium, and said that, by the way, we love your program. I said, you like my program? How do you listen to my program? And they said, well, it's all over the internet. We can pick it up here. I said, you're not, you know, and he said, no, you know, we pick it up. I said, oh, great. Well, thank you very much. So thank you very much, because if it wasn't for all of you, we wouldn't be doing this program. Jane, how can I help you? Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I noticed that you mentioned POTS, and that's something that I was diagnosed with. And I also was diagnosed with fibromyalgia.
Okay.
But it's weird. I have a very low erythrosedimentation rate and low inflammation in my body, yet I have these other symptoms. I also have bradycardia. My
okay.
heart rate is very, very low.
Okay, so I've got about 2.5 minutes that I can answer your question. So
okay.
You want to bring it down to a question, or do you want me just to comment?
Yeah, if you could just comment if you think you might know the source of that.
Okay, so POTS is something that we've dealt with for many, many years, and it's one that is, in my opinion, a catch-all for medical diagnosis. And, you know, when you have postural shifts in pressure, it's called orthostatic hypotension, and your blood pressure will drop. Tachycardia, the heart rate goes up. There's weakness, often chest pain, shortness of breath, things of that nature, but they don't answer the question, where does it come from? And, you know, they talk about it being autonomia, and it means that, you know, they can't regulate the nervous system, and, you know, they go into these things. Now, when we talked about the vagus nerve controls everything that we're talking about here. And we see that there are two systems that are involved in most POT conditions. One is the adrenal, the fight-flight system of the body. And usually the system has been overtaxed, overstressed, either structurally, chemically, emotionally. And the other is the nervous system, the central nervous system from the brain, spinal cord, but specifically the vagus nerve that we've been talking about. And, you know, you stand up and you have this increase in heart rate. You have a drop in blood pressure, sometimes pains in the hand and feet, and there's lightheadedness, there's fatigue, shakiness. I mean, the list is huge. And, you know, I'm just going off the top of my head, giving you something, even to the point where it can affect the intestinal tract. And remember, all of these things we talked about as far as the vagus system or this vagal response within the body. Now, you said fibromyalgia. Fibromyalgia is one of the, is probably the most misdiagnosed condition. I wrote a paper years ago. It's called Fibromyalgia, the Undisease, meaning that it's a set of symptoms. You can have pressure over the, you know, the different reflex points. You have to have 11 out of the 18 as described by the American College of Rheumatology many years ago. The pain has to be in all four quadrants. It can't go away. It has to be constant for 3 months. It can have other things that are associated with it, but it does not affect the joint spaces. It affects the fibrous connective tissue. And in fibromyalgia, there's no inflammatory response. You cannot diagnose it by traditional means. Now, there are different fibers within the muscles in a fibro case that are affected, but you have to do biopsies, and most people don't do that. But there is a very specific set of conditions. Again, you look at the central nervous system, you look at the intestinal tract, you look at the adrenal system. And when you really put the condition together and you look at the patient from a structural, chemical, emotional pathway, you can make a difference. Jane, I'm sorry. I wish I had talked to you a little sooner. Call back again. We'll get more into it. You know, the problem with the program is it's like way too short, and I can give you a whole lot of information that can be extremely effective. So I'll tell you what, petition the station. Make it 3 hours. It would be a really, really good time. Then I could take all your questions. We're coming up to that part of the program, which I have to say adieu till next week, and bring you more information, hopefully, that can affect your life. We do this for you. Why? Because we love you. See you later. Bye.